Wednesday, February 25th, 2026. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your weekend went well. I hope your week now is going well, and that you, your family, your friends, everyone in your world is staying strong and healthy right now. And I really hope that you enjoyed those 2026 Winter Olympics from Italy. Hey, they had some serious drama. We saw a number of things taking place there. We saw Lindsey Vonn destroy her leg trying to ski with a blown ACL. She says that there was a risk of amputation after that horrible accident. We saw Michaela Schifrin make history on the ski slopes. And she had struggled at times. She stepped up in a big way. Ilya Malinin, the quad god, got nervous and fell down in his biggest moment. Elisa Liu seemed like she was just having a blast on her ice skates, and she triumphed in her biggest moment. The U.S. women's hockey team rebounded from their loss back in those 2022 Olympics to beat Canada and win the gold medal. And of course, the men's hockey team, hey, they might not have been the most talented team, but it seemed like they were the greatest team. And Jack Hughes spit a few teeth out on the ice after a high stick and then came back in the game with blood in his mouth and scored the golden goal. And Team USA beat Canada in overtime and won their first gold medal since that miracle on ice 46 years ago in Lake Placid. Hey, I'll be the first to say, the Winter Olympics are weird, but there were some really entertaining aspects to these games I was watching. But now, we are moving on to another exciting time of the sports calendar, because we are now getting into that time of year where we start ramping up for March Madness. Hey, the Super Bowl was boring this year. The NBA Finals, I don't know, they seem like they're getting worse every year. Major League Baseball, of course, can be a snooze fest. But hey, March Madness, it just lives up to the hype every single year. Every single year, they talk about, hey, there's going to be upsets. There's going to be surprises. There's going to be last second shots. There's going to be amazing performances. And guess what? It lives up to it every single year. Well, hey, we are going to begin getting you ready for March Madness. And what better way to do that than by having a guy that just wrote a book about maybe the greatest Cinderella story in the history of the NCAA tournament on the show here. Hey, in fact, let's jump into that right now. Joining us this week on the Daily Dose, I've got a guest that I'm really personally looking forward to having on and talking a little bit with, because Keith O'Brien is a New York Times bestselling author. He has written five books, including Charlie Hustle, about the late Pete Rose, Outside Shots, which I actually read, and it drills down into a year of Kentucky high school basketball. He also wrote Fly Girls and Paradise Falls. His work has appeared in New York Times Magazine, The Atlantic, Rolling Stone, The Wall Street Journal, National Public Radio. He is everywhere. This is a big-time author here. Well, his latest release is named Heartland, and I'm telling you from personal experience, it is a page-turner because it covers basketball in Indiana and specifically the legend himself, Larry Bird. You know, before Larry Bird became a legend, he was just a kid from a small town, French Lick. He had some issues. We're going to drill down on that just a little bit. But this book kind of shows how basketball is in Indiana. It shows the journey that Bird had to go on. And when you read the story, you're kind of like, I don't know how he made it to where he is, because it's actually unreal. But Keith O'Brien, welcome to the Daily Dose. I am genuinely happy to have you here today.
Thanks so much for having me, Clint. Great to be with you.
Keith, just a little background on you. Where did you grow up? Were you back in that part of the country?
Yeah, so I'm born and raised in the Midwest, and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio. And so, you know, when I wrote my book, Charlie Hustle, about Pete Rose, I was really coming home in a lot of ways. Sure. And it was really coming out of that project that I was thinking about other Midwestern stories that we, you know, maybe have overlooked. And that's when I started thinking about Larry Bird. And, you know, I feel like every time someone is told the Bird story, They always do the bird magic thing, you know, the bird magic sing song back and forth narrative. Because, of course, as many of you will know, you know, Bird and Magic going to face each other in that epic NCAA championship game in March 1979. And will, of course, both go on to have iconic sports careers. So I get it as a storyteller why you would want to do it that way. But the truth is, you know, Bird and Magic weren't friends. They barely knew each other in 1979. They'd only met once in that one meeting. They barely spoke at all. So, you know, they don't have a relationship. They don't aren't rivals. And what I really wanted to do here was sort of tilt the camera in a different way, take a different perspective, and tell the story of the rise of Larry Bird in rural Indiana and the enduring miracle of his 1979 Indiana State team, because it was a miracle.
No, it absolutely was. And I'm glad that you are a Midwest guy, because you get it. People don't understand basketball in that part of the country, Ohio, Indiana, even going into a little bit of Illinois, Pennsylvania, that kind of thing. It's like football in Texas. It's just different. 10 of the 12 largest high school gymnasiums anywhere are in Indiana. They seat more than 7,000 fans. That's in high school. That's just how things go. Now, I'm going to be totally honest. I grew up, I'm from Denver. I'm a Denver kid. I was not a Larry Bird fan. I hated Larry Bird. I hated the Boston Celtics, but I had a friend in school. His name was Andy. He was a little older. He was way wiser. And he told me once, watch what he does, not how he does it. And I grew to appreciate his game as a young kid, because I didn't like Bird. I didn't like the Celtics. They were so much better than any of my terrible Denver Rocket and Denver Nuggets teams. But I started to watch him and go, oh, I get it. He is just such a different player. But he came from some very meager roots. He had a very rough background, as you lay out in the book. French Luke had some rough parts of it, didn't it?
Yeah, so my story in Heartland unfolds between 1973 and 1979. You know, everything after 1979 is essentially epilogue material for me. It is this crucible that forms Larry Bird. And you're 100% right. I mean, I went to French Lick. I spent a lot of time in French Lick during the reporting of this book. And, you know, I urge anyone out there, you know, look at where French Lick is on the map. There's no direct way to get there in 2026. There absolutely wasn't a direct way to get there in 1974 when Larry was a senior in high school. So it's a place unto itself. It was a poor town in the 1970s, in one of the poorest counties in the state of Indiana. So it's a place filled with troubles. And Larry, you know, his home in particular, was representative of that. I mean, he really had a lot to overcome.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And your, you know, book lays it out. But, you know, so many people, you already spoke to this. They know about that amazing run in 79. They know about Indiana State going to the national championship. They faced Michigan State, the whole thing. I'm not sure, and I'm a basketball guy. I don't know that I knew how his 78 season had gone until I read it in your book. You don't really hear much about that, but the 78 season, Indiana State in 79 wasn't quite as completely unknown as I guess maybe we're led to believe. In 78, they're pretty darn good too.
Well, right. Yeah. Well, they had Larry Bird. So, yes. you know, Larry plays three seasons at Indiana State, and, you know, Indiana State in those years, you know, was a small program. It was teetering on the brink of being banished to Division II. It wasn't playing in a conference when Larry joined the basketball team there. To your point a minute ago, Clint, I mean, there were high school basketball teams in Indiana in the 70s that drew larger crowds than Indiana State did. So, you know, they were not on anyone's radar. And, you know, initially, for that reason, no one pays any attention to Larry Bird. He plays his entire first year there without getting hardly any press at all. But before his second season, the 77-78 year, you know, there's a lightning bolt moment that happens. Sports Illustrated puts Larry Bird on the cover of its college basketball preview issue. And, you know, for those out there who are my age, your age, Clint, we know what Sports Illustrated meant to landscape in the 70s and 80s. It was everything. It was the sports Bible. And, that iconic cover of Larry Bird with a couple of Indiana State cheerleaders is photographed at a studio in Chicago in late October 1977. I interviewed everyone who was part of that photo shoot, including, most importantly, maybe the photographer himself, a man named Lane Stewart. And that moment really puts Larry Bird on the map. And, Indiana State is ranked in preseason polls in 77, 78, but they flame out. They start well, but they go on a bad losing streak in January and February. And in those days, there were only 32 teams in the NCAA tournament. And think about that for a second. We're right on the cusp of March Madness here. There are going to be 68 teams that are getting a bid to play. And then we'll still have about 10 schools that complain that they didn't get one. You know, in 1978, there were 32 bids. You basically had to win your conference. And then there were a handful of at-large bids to be handed out. Bird doesn't get one. Indiana State doesn't get one. And in fact, all the way into late February 1979, Larry Bird has never once played on national TV. Not once.
Wow. Hey, remember, you should be stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week to see what new things we have going on over there. We have links to the podcast. We have links to videos. And we have links to new articles each week. So make sure you check that out. Remember, you can always email the podcast at DailyDoseSports@gmail.com. We always love to hear from our listeners. And remember, you can pick up some Daily Dose gear over at the website as well. Maybe you need a t-shirt, a hoodie, a sweatshirt, a baseball cap. They have it all over there. You can find the links to it over at DailyDoseSports.com. Well, and your book does such a great job of comparing that era in the late 70s, even to today with NIL. And you discuss a little bit, hey, there were some things going on behind the scenes that maybe people weren't aware of at the big schools. Indiana State couldn't afford to do that stuff, though. They were just trying to hold on.
Well, you know, one thing's for certain is, you know, the world has completely changed.
Yes.
And because of those changes, I do think it's going to be harder for us to have an Indiana State kind of miracle.
That's fair.
Let me be clear. I do believe that college athletes should be paid, should be compensated. You know, for decades, the NCAA and major college programs profited off the backs of young athletes, often to their own detriment. You know, young players got injured, burned out, got nothing for it. That was wrong. But the world we're living in now has created a system where it's just going to be much harder for a Larry Bird, Indiana State miracle to take place. Could a player of Larry Bird's caliber and talent slip through the cracks and not be recruited by top schools and end up at a small school like Indiana State? Yes, absolutely. That can still happen in 2026. But once Larry Bird was there at Indiana State, he proved right away that he was for real. You know, averaged almost 30 points a game, in 1976-77, his first year. There's a reason why Sports Illustrated is putting him on the cover in November 1977 and calling him college basketball's secret weapon, because he is. And you know, in these days, you know, that player would have been able to cash in and leave the school that recruited him or her initially and go sign with a bigger program. And again, I think that's great for players, but it's really hard on fans. And it's going to make a miracle Cinderella story like Indiana State much harder, because in this day and time, you know, a young Larry Bird, you know, would have left most likely and gotten paid to play big money to play somewhere else.
Your book also dives into the background of one Robert Montgomery Knight, one of the most controversial and confusing personalities probably in American sports history. Of course, Bird began his collegiate career at the University of Indiana playing for Knight. It didn't go so well, did it?
Well, you know, Bird ends up at Indiana in August and September 1974. But it's not because Bobby Knight was falling over himself to sign Bird. You know, he comes to a little late to the party in the spring of 74, but he is the biggest name in Indiana. I mean, I think he in 1974 was the most important man in Indiana. Sure. Everybody in town, in French Lick, in West Baden, where Bird grew up, wants him to sign there, wants him to go play for Bobby Knight. And he does. And Bird doesn't make it 3 weeks at Indiana. And, you know, I have fresh reporting, new scenes and details in the book about that, you know, about what happened there. But when Bird leaves in September of 74 and hitchhikes home to French Lick, it is a point in time where we are on the brink of losing Larry Bird forever. You know, he to just give you a perspective of how big, or rather how small, Larry Bird was in September 1974. There is only one newspaper in the state of Indiana that writes about him leaving. It's the Bloomington Herald Telephone. One article. You know, Knight is out of town at a coach's convention. He's giving a talk up in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the night that Bird leaves. And you know, when he gets the news that Bird is gone, he doesn't panic. He doesn't rush home or go down to French Lick. As he tells the Bloomington Herald Telephone, "We've accepted it. He's gone." You know, and in that winter of 74, 75, you know, no one is writing stories about whither Larry Bird, or where's Larry Bird going to play. He's already gone. You know, he briefly, you know, plays basketball at a vocational school. This is not a community college. This is not a JUCO program. He plays basketball at a vocational school of about 200 students in West Baden Springs, Indiana. He then quits there, gets a job with the street department in French Lick, where he's paving roads, collecting trash, and by February 1975, Larry Bird is effectively playing pickup basketball in what was known as the Industrial League in Indiana. This is essentially over 30 men's basketball. The teams were sponsored by taverns, liquor stores, sporting goods stores, construction companies. The guys don't have matching uniforms. Most of Larry Bird's teammates and opponents have day jobs and wives and kids. And in the scant articles that were written about Bird, or about his team rather, in the sports pages, small little tidbits about the Industrial League, at times that winter, they can't even spell his name right. So he is gone, and we very nearly lose him.
That is absolutely unreal. Somehow, Indiana State, who kind of doesn't have a coach at the time, their athletic director kind of takes over, and Bob King, somehow fishes Bird out and brings him back. That is just unreal that it even happened that way. A guy that wasn't the coach, was the AD and kind of had to name himself coach, ends up pulling Bird out. Without him, we don't know who Larry Bird is.
Well, right. So Bob King is the athletic director at Indiana State that winter. And he fires his head coach at the end of that season and appoints himself to be coach. Now, it sounds crazy on the face of it, but Bob King, you know, had been a great coach at New Mexico in the 60s and early 70s. So he had retired and is now returning to the game. And Bob King hires as his lead recruiter someone who understands Indiana. Bob King is from Iowa originally, spent most of his life out west. He doesn't know Indiana. And so he hires a man named Bill Hodges, a young assistant, a bit of a journeyman, to be his lead recruiter. And Bill Hodges shows up in Terre Haute, Indiana in April 1975. And based on my reporting, the very first thing Bill Hodges wants to do is go down to French Lick and see if he can find Larry Bird. You know, Hodges has seen Bird play two times, but knows that he's too good to not be playing anywhere. And really, this is the moment. And it's Bill Hodges who's the person who pulls Larry Bird back from the brink. You know, sometime early that April, Hodges goes down there, down to French Lick, which is, you know, over a 2-hour drive from Terre Haute, and goes hunting for Bird. He goes to the high school. He goes to Bird's house and ultimately finds Bird outside the laundromat on State Road 56, there on the edge of West Baden and French Lick. And in a meeting that will happen that day inside Bird's grandmother's house, Bill Hodges connects with Larry. And I think what's important to know about Bill Hodges is he's a lot like Larry Bird. You know, he's from rural Indiana. He knows what it's like to be poor and overlooked. And really he connects with Bird, and it is that connection, and that perseverance, that in my opinion, based on my reporting, you know, pulls Bird back from the brink and saves him from a life potentially in obscurity.
Well, and a life, you know, based on his background and based on his family, a life that could have gone down a really, really dark path when you know what happened with his father and that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And you spoke to this a little bit before, Keith, but the run that Indiana State goes on all the way to the national title game, it might be the greatest Cinderella run in history. You have two guys that spend any time in the NBA. Larry Bird, obviously. Carl Nix had a cup of coffee in Denver, I might add, with my Nuggets. The only other guy to ever make an NBA roster. This was a group of guys that you wouldn't have given them a prayer, but Bird was that good to carry them.
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly seen great Cinderella stories over the years. You know, NC State, 1983, sure. Butler Bulldogs, 2010. You know, Villanova, you know, there have been others, but I agree. I mean, this is an epic story. You know, they, enter that 78-79 season unranked, in their own conference. The press and the coaches are picking Indiana State to finish third or fourth, in their own conference. No one expects them to do anything. An assistant coach, to give you a sense of just how little faith people had in Larry Bird and in this team, an assistant coach quits just days before the practices began that fall because he has not been awarded the head coaching job after an illness befalls Bob King and Bill Hodges takes over. If this coach believed, of course, that this team was great, he would have stayed, but he doesn't. And so this team really does come out of nowhere.
I have a question for you, and maybe just to get your thoughts on it. I am fascinated by the narrative that Larry Bird could not have success in this era today when I'm literally watching a guy has a game a whole lot like Bird right here in Denver and Nikola Jokic. Same thing with Luka Doncic out in LA. And I'm going, what are you talking about? His mental game overcame every physical liability that he may have had.
I don't know who is, you know, arguing that point of view, but I would strongly disagree with the notion that Larry Bird wouldn't be able to compete in 2026. I mean, listen, the game has fully changed. We all know this. The players and their training regimens have changed. Their physiques and their bodies have changed. The ability to play into their 40s is now commonplace. It's incredible. You know, what we're seeing with LeBron, we take it for granted. It's so common these days.
Yeah.
You know, Larry Bird in 2026, certainly his body wouldn't have looked like it looked in 1980 or 81, 82. You know, he would have he would have been training just like all the guys are these days. And regardless of all that, there are two things about Bird that absolutely translate to today's game. The first is he's one of the greatest shooters of all time.
Correct.
And you know, he was shooting from the outside in an era when coaches didn't want you to shoot outside, when it wasn't encouraged to shoot from the outside. You know, he was in a lot of ways Steph Curry before Steph Curry. So, no, he would be still that incredible shooter today. And the second thing is just something that's inside of him. You know, Larry Bird has that trait that all so many great athletes have. He is driven, by grievance. He is driven for revenge. He is driven to prove himself every single night, and a lot of great all-time athletes had that quality. Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Tom Brady, on and on. And so Bird, for all those reasons, would absolutely be tearing up the league in 2026.
Agree 100%. And the way that he played, we're literally watching guys take from his game today. People look at my guy here, Nikola Jokic, here in Denver, and they're going, oh, he sees the floor. That was Bird was doing that 40 years ago, and I don't know that people truly grasp that, because sports people in general are usually the youth. They're the loudest, at least, and they have no memory and they have no history. So they just don't grasp it. But what Bird was doing way back then, it's absolutely the same thing as what Jokic is doing now. I've got to ask you, because you did go up to the national championship, the national championship game against that's, kind of where it ends there. Was there a story or maybe something that you got from Bird that, because you did end there, that you couldn't use? Was there a story that you had that you're like, oh, I'd like to use that, but I it just doesn't fit where you went with the book?
Well, in any reporting project, in any book, you're leaving things on the cutting room floor. You should be. You should be. It's not my job, I don't think, to fill my book with a bunch of information and stories. It's my job to tell a good story.
Yes.
And to keep that story moving and so that the reader wants to go to the next chapter, wants to turn the page. And so I am constantly cutting out of my books, lots of good things, because I want to keep it on track. I want to keep it moving. And so certainly, yes, there were lots of things that I know, that I learned, scenes, moments, details that aren't included in the book. I'll just share one here. Much later, well past my narrative, which again, Heartland takes place between 73 and 79. Everything else is epilogue. And there is an epilogue, of course, showing, just how that one moment in time changes everything for Bird and the people around him. But, much later, sort of unrelated to my story, Bird is now, with the Indiana Pacers. He's, the president of the Pacers. And as many people will know, Bird won a gold medal in 1992 with the Dream Team. And Bird had a couple kids at this point in time. And his daughter apparently wanted to bring the gold medal to school for show and tell. Bird did not have his gold medal. The gold medal was still in Terre Haute. It was being kept by a good friend. And Bird called the friend and said, hey, would you mind sending the gold medal over? Explain the reason why his daughter had show and tell. And his friend said, listen, I'm not putting this thing in the mail. I'm going to drive it over to you. I will drive it. It's an hour and a half, sure, from Terre Haute to Indianapolis. But Bird, is a frugal man and would not tolerate the notion that someone was going to, take the time out of their day, gas money, et cetera, to drive over to Indianapolis for the absurdity of bringing and delivering a gold medal. And so he insisted that Larry, that his friend mail the gold medal to him. And so that's what he did.
Oh, my goodness. You have just summed up exactly who Larry Bird is, though. You know, the old story of he was never the same after he hurt his back, that he hurt laying his own driveway because he didn't want to, you know, pay for somebody to go do it. But no one worked harder. Go pick it up. Heartland, covering Larry Bird, A Forgotten Place, An Impossible Dream, and The Miracle of Larry Bird. I'm telling you, I was telling Keith before we started recording, I was reading it. I was plowing through it. I was like, oh, I should try to finish it before we go to record. And then I was like, I'm enjoying it too much. I had to take my time and be like, no, this is a good ribeye steak. I'm not going to hurry through and jam it down my throat because it is just too good. I'm just enjoying it too much. I am telling you, just in time for March Madness, you're going to want to go pick up Heartland. Is there a place that people can keep up with you? Is there a place that they can follow you, or a best place to go pick this up? Just go grab it on Amazon, or what's the best place to go purchase this?
Well, you can find me in all the usual places. I'm on Instagram at O'Brien Story, and all the other social media platforms too. Okay. As for the book, you can order Heartland today wherever they sell books. Wherever you get your book. Your books, you can find Heartland there. And if you're interested in a signed copy, my local independent bookseller here in New Hampshire, Water Street Books, does ship for free. Go to the Water Street Books website, Water Street Books in Exeter, New Hampshire, and order signed books directly from there. And they will arrive as if by some miracle through the mail, just like Larry Bird's gold medal one.
Just like his gold medal. Perfect. Excellent way to sandwich that in. Keith, I could not thank you more for your time. I've got one last question for you, and I'm going to put you on the spot, and I apologize in advance. Talking college basketball, getting into that silly season of March Madness. Who's going to do it? Who's your pick? Is there a team out there you like?
I don't know.
It's so hard.
The one game that I was invested in recently was North Carolina's upset of Duke. That was a lot of fun. Love that rivalry. But listen, if we've learned anything about March Madness, it's that it's the team you're not thinking of that's probably going
right. to run. No, you're exactly right. And you know, the little old lady, there's a reason she wins the pool every year, because it doesn't make sense. It is completely insane. And if the more you know, I think the less you know when it comes time for March Madness, because it is chaos. Like I said, Heartland, go pick it up. Keith, I cannot thank you enough for stopping by the Daily Dose. Hey, if you have anything else coming out, I would be glad to have you back at any time. Really, really enjoyed our conversation. But thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
Hey, next week on the Dose, we are going to keep getting you ready for that NCAA tournament that is coming quickly. Plus, we will keep you up on all that is going on in the world of sports. So be sure you check out the Dose, and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you so much to author Keith O'Brien for stopping by the Daily Dose. I enjoyed our conversation and hope you can stop by again. And I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the text. Thank you for the tweets. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.